quote Jay Garrick, played by John Wesley Shipp in The Flash, "The future isn't written yet, and it might not even be what you saw. You need to focus on the here and now. You need to live your life." Unless, of course, it gets in the way of watching TV. Welcome to Nerd Out. My name's Sanjo. You guys don't care about that because Rob Lloyd is here.
I do care about that you're here because you're recording everything. If you weren't here, I'd just be sitting in my room alone, quiet, talking to myself like I do every time.
Well, technically, well, I am wearing a headphone and I'm talking to a microphone, so technically I am in my room sitting talking to myself at the moment to anyone on the outside.
Yeah, anyone walks in, they're just going, oh, it's Sandra doing his Sunday morning thing.
Just let him be. He'll be fine. Just give him a few hours. We've got a great episode today. We're going to be focusing on DC and the Arrowverse and everything that they've been putting out, because all the seasons have gone on break for the mid-season break, of course, over Christmas. So we're going to be chatting about that. Also, Class.
We're getting our teeth into the latest Doctor Who spin-off and what our opinions are, and we're also going to be looking at you. Your opinions, the listeners, that we've been inundated. That's been the most popular of the subjects we've been looking at so far, Sandra. People have been wanting to share their opinion in either short or long form on the Facebook page, and even on my personal page, they've come and jumped on the bandwagon. So we'll be reading out some of those as well, which is very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. I'm very interested to see what you think about Class, because it's been a pretty divisive show, so it's going to be interesting to see what everyone thinks of it. But to kick everything off, we do, of course, start the show with nerd headlines, the nerd news from all around the internet. And over the past couple days, we have seen so many trailers come out, including one that we're going to kick off with that I absolutely loved, and that's the trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the next Marvel film. What did you think of their debut trailer, Rob?
Yeah, it was sort of like pretty much more of the same, which was really good, what we've expected from the Guardians franchise. You know, the film came out of nowhere. Nobody really knew it. It wasn't even C-grade level Marvel comic book. It was like almost D or E. James Gunn, the director, is carrying on with the tradition that built him strong, you know, the strong characters, the funky retro music, you know, the really sharp, twisted sense of humor. So all the characters are back, all the style is there. And it looks like a hell of a lot of fun just carrying on the tradition of the first one.
I love the trailer. I just want to say that the person who edited this trailer, you need to make all the Marvel trailers, because Marvel trailers, especially the past couple ones, I'm talking your Age of Ultrons, to a certain extent, your Doctor Strange trailers, they're full of spoilers. You know, they kind of give away the first maybe hour of the movie. This one, I still don't know what the movie's about. It just looks like a lot of fun. So whoever edited this trailer together, well done. And yeah, the movie looks great. As always, the performances, it's back to what we love. It's exactly what I want. And I love how it's also coming out in the summer, because, of course, the first one, I think it came out in August, so around the same time that Suicide Squad did really well, and now they trust it enough to check it out in the prime slot for the Marvel Universe, which is really cool. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's definitely in my top five for the films I'm looking forward to next year. One that isn't is The Mummy. It's the first installment in Universal Monsters. They're trying to make some new shared universe with a whole bunch of monsters that Universal own. And so to start it off, they've rebooted the Mummy franchise with Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Universal had the rights to all these characters for decades, you know, to Wolfman, the Mummy, Dracula, Frankenstein, Dr. Jekyll, the Invisible Man, all this stuff. They were iconic films of the, you know, the 30s and 40s back in the day. And they tried to do a soft reboot launch years ago with a film. I'm not sure if you remember the film. It was a film called Van Helsing. Do you remember that film, Sandro?
It sounds familiar. I think I saw it. I don't remember.
Yes, Mr. Hugh Jackman and Mr. Richard Roxburgh in the role of Dracula. They tried to do it then, so like reboot the monster franchise, and to appalling effect. It didn't do that well at all because it was a horrible film. But they're trying to do it now. They've seen the success of the inbuilt universe of Marvel and what DC is trying to do, and Universal trying to get in on the bandwagon because it's all about franchises nowadays. So Their Mummy reboot modernized it, put a bankable star in there. to do it and trying to develop this shared universe. So Russell Crowe is playing Henry Jekyll, Dr. Henry Jekyll, and they're trying to start building up this modern world filled with ancient zombies. So the trailer was, you know, hit. It was a good trailer, as in not much was shown. It was all about dread and, you know, the oncoming storm of apocalypse and stuff like that. The mummy's now a woman as opposed to, you know, a man from the one with Brendan Fraser. So, but yes, it didn't really, you know, do anything to spark any excitement or interest. There was just a lot of groans and moans and rolling of eyes from the majority of people on the internet.
Yeah, I would say I quite enjoy the Mummy movies. The first two, not particularly the third one or any of the Scorpion King films. But I really like the first two. And the reason I like them was because they're not just straight up action adventure horror, right? Like, they are comedies. They've got some very funny moments in them. And Brendan Fraser does a brilliant job at that. But this one looks like they're going to be playing it really straight, and I'm not entirely certain if it's going to work, because that's not really what I associate the Mummy franchise with.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, and, you know, getting in someone like Tom Cruise, who's, you know, a bankable star within a certain genre.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see with that one. Another trailer that dropped, one that I'm really looking forward to, I don't know about yourself, but it's War of the Planet of the Apes, the third film in the reboot Planet of the Apes series. We had Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was the first one with James Franco, really loved it. And then in 2014, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes with Gary Oldman. Wasn't as good as the first one, but it had some really cool elements in there. This one looks like it's probably going to be the best out of all of them. The trailer was really epic. You've got Woody Harrelson in there as kind of the main character, obviously, aside from Andy Serkis. And he's going to bring something interesting. This is a very different role for him, and I'm really intrigued as to see where he takes it. The Planet of the Apes films, I've always kind of been annoyed about the human characters aside from James Franco. I think he was the only one to really knock it out of the park, whereas Gary Oldman in Dawn, he was okay. I didn't love him.
Yeah, you could see him. He just phoned it in, took his money and ran, which is okay. You know, I want Gary Oldman to go back to, you know, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy level performances. I want him to push the boundaries, stop doing these, you know, commercially things as much now, and really, you know, bring on the Oldman of old, who we love.
Yeah, but from the trailer, I think Woody Harrelson, he's got the right performance. Whether or not it'll continue throughout the film, we'll have to wait and see, but I am actually really excited for this movie. What about yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge Planet of the Apes fan. I've been a fan since high school. I did my my year 12 artwork based on Planet of the Apes. I created this entire comic book style of representing all the characters, and I did this epic piece that covered all of the original five Planet of the Apes film, dealt with the issues of religion versus science. So I love it. You know, I'm a huge Roddy McDowall fan, and he became the star of Heston was the star of the first one, but Roddy McDowall had an important role, and then Roddy McDowall came for the last Escape from Planet of the Apes, Conquest of Planet of the Apes, and Battle for the Planet of the Apes. So yeah, I've even watched the, you know, the TV series that only lasted one season. I watched the Tim Burton disastrous reboot in 2000. So I was cautious when these new series came out, but I've enjoyed both of them, and they're kind of following the traditions of the previous film. So there's a little bit of Conquest in Rise for the Planet of the Apes, and this one, War 4, not War of, War 4, which is a really good...
It is War for the... I didn't know that. There we go.
Yeah, close attention, because it's the War 4, who is going to run the... which is very much... The last film that was done back in the 70s was called Battle for the Planet of the Apes, and so this is War. So they're taking that, because it was a very cheap budget on that last film back in the 70s with Roddy McDowall. So, like, their epic battle was just in a field. There was about, like, 25 trucks and guys in, you know, chimp makeup running around firing fake machine gun, which was hilarious. But, yeah, I'm very I wait to see. I don't race out and invest everything into these films. I like to sit back, watch them, and go, oh, they did well there. So we'll see how epic this post-apocalyptic world goes.
And the last one was a massive hit in the box office. I'm on the page now. It made $710 million. So hopefully this one can continue that. It'll be interesting to see if the audiences are willing to go again and see another Planet of the Apes movie.
Definitely. And from intrigue and interest to outright derision with our next trailer.
Oh, dear. So, Transformers 5. Yeah, I have no idea what the story of this film is. I'm on the Wikipedia page. There's nothing. The only thing it says is that for some reason King Arthur's in the cast, so there must be some flashbacks or time travel or something. All that we know is Optimus Prime is in space, and that's pretty much it. I would say I'm a fan of Transformers. I enjoyed the original 80s show. I've watched a fair bit of it, but where my fandom for Transformers came from was the comics. I love the comics, and I read them a lot. I still kind of read them. They're doing some interesting stuff with them at the moment. I need to catch up. And I've enjoyed the films. I liked the first one. The second one wasn't very good, and after that, they just kind of got worse. But I don't know what it is, but this one looks like it's going to be really bad. There are a couple of, I guess, positives. You got Josh Dunnell. He's going to be returning with Tyrese Gibson. They're from the first three, so they're going to be joining Mark Wahlberg.
That's right. Wahlberg's back, but not this weird thing in Age of Extinction where they had like his daughter, and she was old enough, and they were, and then she had the boyfriend, and they were seeing each other. But they did the whole, it works in some way in this particular state that, you know, she's a minor, and you're there going, why are you even doing this? Why is this a thing in the film? So I'm glad they've gotten rid of that, at least. And they've got, you know, they do have Marky Mark back, who will be most definitely outshone by CGI, because his acting is, you know, needs some CGI enhancement, I think.
It's missing the best character in the Transformers franchise, and that was TJ Miller in Age of Extinction. He got killed off way too early. He should have been the main... He should be in Mark Wahlberg's position. TJ Miller should be the main character of Transformers 5.
Right, yeah. He was the, you know, the slapstick funny guy who was like almost a stoner type thing, and he was running away and was turned into molten ash or metal or something. Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the final trailer that came out, and that is another Marvel trailer. We've got two this time, and this is the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming, the upcoming Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland and Michael Keaton. I absolutely love the trailer. It looks like they are going to be doing Spider-Man right. I've enjoyed the two previous franchises. I enjoyed elements from them. Like, for example, the Tobey Maguire one, I thought it got the villains really well. The characters could have used a little bit of work. I didn't really relate to Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man too much. I related a lot to The Amazing Spider-Man, of course, with Andrew Garfield. I really enjoyed those two films, but then, of course, they got the villains completely wrong. So this film looks like it's going to be getting both right, hopefully. It is a Marvel film, so you still got to take it with a grain of salt, but it is Michael Keaton, so hopefully he'll be able to pull it off. What did you think of the trailer?
Yeah, it's a masterpiece of a trailer. It's a beautiful setup. It's a beautiful statement about here's our style, here's our role within the world, and here's what we do. So a story that has been told, this is the third retelling of this story, the space of 15 years, and to come in and hit it fresh for people to, instead of going, oh, it's so boring, oh, we're seeing it again, to people go, yes, I want to see this story, and it's exciting enough. Beautiful shots like, you know, having Peter Parker and his friends sitting there just idolizing Mary Jane and how he fits in with Tony Stark, which is a beautiful addition. The two of them popped so well with chemistry in Civil War, so it's good to carry on with that. Michael Keaton is a beautiful addition, this really horrible, disgusting threat to our hero, which is, you know, a challenge he has to overcome. And Holland has just a beautiful presence on screen, a beautiful energy, a beautiful raw excitement about what he wants to do, and bringing something fresh and new to something that could easily be well past its use-by date.
And I'm just looking at the cast now. I've got the characters like Shocker showing up. Flash Thompson is played by Tony Revolri. He's been in some really cool films like The Grand Budapest Hotel, and one of my favourites from last year, which was a small indie called Dope, which I really enjoyed. We still don't know who Donald Glover is playing. He showed up for like a split second in the trailer. I've heard a rumour that he might be playing Miles Morales' father, who was a criminal in the comics, and of course he plays Miles Morales in the Ultimate Spider-Man animated show, so it'll be really cool if he plays his father kind of passing the torch and that type of thing. Plus, everyone's always wanted Donald Glover in a Spider-Man movie, so we're finally getting it.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I think they've got nothing but extremely positive feedback online, so it's, you know, roll on next year, 2017, to bring on, you know, a new exciting version of Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. Now, I think it's time to move on and ask the question, What have we been consuming lately?
Yes, well, both of us have been heavily consuming the DC television universe, you know, or the Arrowverse, as it's called by some people, or the Berlanti universe, the man who's, you know, behind all four shows on the CW now, and P.S. Gotham. we've been consuming that. Now that we're at the mid-season finales have just come out, we're on a bit of a break, so we can reflect on how, you know, the first half of all these later seasons have gone down. And let's start with you, Sandro, looking at Arrow. It's been a bit up and down with Arrow, and your relationship with Arrow has been a love-hate relationship. You've sort of like had your strong moments, you've had your time apart. How does season five hold up?
Yes. So season five, possibly the last season as we know it. They've always kind of talked about this five-season arc, and they're very much wrapping it up. You're right, Arrow, I've had a weird relationship with Arrow. I've loved it the first two seasons, really enjoyed it. Then season three came along. Second half of season three was painful with Ra's al Ghul and with what they were doing with Felicity. It was so forced. The same with season four. Loved the first half. Second half, it just, the writing was just really painful. And going into season five, they've kind of reversed that. The first five episodes of season five don't really need to be there. They're only there to kind of set up this new team. We do have a bunch of new characters, including Wild Dog and Artemis. We've also got Mr. Terrific. Curtis has finally become Mr. Terrific. I think he was a recurring character in the in seasons 3 and 4. Now he's a main cast member as Mr. Terrific, and he is terrific. I can confirm that. He's been very good. The first five episodes weren't really that great. They kind of set up the villain of the season, which was Prometheus, but they haven't really gone that far into it. They haven't really done much at all, those first five episodes. But then episode six came along and it completely changed it all. They have been killing it. Episodes 6, 7, 8, and 9 have all been fantastic episodes. I've loved every single one of them. They have been doing this really cool thing. They have been reflecting back on Oliver. Oliver has always been a really weird character to kind of, I guess, relate to and to understand what he's thinking. They have done it well sometimes, but then after 3 and 4, it didn't really work. You didn't really know what Oliver was thinking, and that all came down to the script. Stephen Amell is a brilliant actor, and he does so well with what he's given. He just wasn't really given too much with those two seasons. This season's the complete opposite. His performance has been fantastic. This has very much been Oliver kind of looking back on his earlier days, like season one when he had the notebook and he was pretty much just going around killing people. The mid-season finale and the reveal of who Prometheus is was so cool. I'm absolutely loving it. But at the same time, first five episodes of the season weren't great, so when it comes to rating it out of 7 Samurai, I'm actually going to split it in half. First five episodes, they get a 3. They didn't really need to be there, but episodes 6, 7, 8, and 9 are fantastic. It's been a lot of fun, and for the second half, I'm going to have to give it a 6 out of 7. I'm loving it as an Arrow fan. It is exactly what I want. So it's been a weird season, and I'm hoping that they can stick the landing with half 2, but I really enjoyed those 4 episodes.
Looks like a very up and down type of show. You sort of like it really, really is dictated from week to week how it flows. So that could be put your seatbelt on and see whether this is going to be a corker of an episode or a stinker.
Definitely, yeah. And we'll have to see where the season goes, because as I said, they've always kind of worked for the first half of the season and not really done too well in the final couple of episodes. But this has kind of been the opposite. It started off a bit rough, now it's kind of smoothed out and it's been really good. So hopefully part two of the season is really, really fun and will make an Arrow fan like myself happy to call myself an Arrow fan, which I haven't really been to for the past couple of years, unfortunately.
You can put that badge of honor back on as opposed to hiding it in your drawer.
Exactly. Now let's move on to The Flash, season 3, gotten the first 9 episodes of that. What have you been thinking of this latest Flash season?
Yeah, it's been really, really solid. The whole point of this season was doing Flashpoint, which is an iconic moment in the comic book series where pretty much Barry Allen goes back and changes the timeline. So there's a whole alternative timeline. So a lot of us were there thinking at the cliffhanger of season 2 that this was going to be all of season 3 was going to be a Flashpoint, alternate reality. And we were all psyched out at the end of episode 1 of season 3 when it was just for that one episode. But what we've found out gradually through the course of this season is that the whole arc is about the ramifications of what Barry has done, and that has caused, you know, irreversible effects within his timeline. And so it's caused horrible repercussions with, you know, Cisco's lost his brother in a car accident, and, you know, the rise of alchemy and Savitar, the first ever meta, has, you know, come about and trying to bring the metas who were in the Flashpoint universe into our reality. And we've also had the rise of Killer Frost. You know, Caitlin Snow has had to deal with her powers, but it's unclear whether it's actually from the Flashpoint thing or whether it was always there and she's just been keeping it a secret. Harrison Wells is back now in a different incarnation, so you've got that role being played in multiple different variations, which is just a gift to see on screen. You know, Wally's now developing his powers and becoming Kid Flash. It's been a wonderful season. It's been a really solid season. The angst is there, but it's not overplayed. The comedy is there. They know how to balance it out. And there's been some beautiful moments within the whole season three. They're a show comfortable with themselves, comfortable with their characters, and comfortable exploring it. Tom Felton has been added to the cast as Julian. He's been a wonderful addition to the show. He kind of just showed up at the end of the Flashpoint episode, and his reveal wasn't that much of a surprise, but his connection to that reveal has been very interesting to see how they've developed it. What about you?
I've been enjoying this season. Flash for me has always kind of come down to the performances. Of course, Grant Gustin he is Barry Allen. He's fantastic as Barry Allen. The same with, of course, Caitlin Snow, who is now Killer Frost, and what they have been doing with Killer Frost, I really like. It kind of adds depth to the team and depth to her character. You know, she's done stuff, but she's never been a massive part of the show. She's always kind of had like her own little storylines, of course, with Firestorm, and then last season with Jay Garrick. But now this one, she's actually kind of standing out on her own, which I really like. The same with Kid Flash. He was one of my favourite parts of Season 2, and he continues to be one of my favourite parts here in Season 3. The way that he has been handling his new powers has been really fun to watch. And, of course, his relationship with Jesse Quick, who is a character who I love in the comics, and they have perfectly brought her to the screen. She is brilliant in the little glimpses that we have gotten of her in this season. I do have a couple of issues here, though.
Yeah.
Probably more so than I had with Season 2, and that is with Cisco. I get what they're doing with Cisco, and I like that Barry has to deal with the personal recut of Flashpoint, but the writing for Cisco, I haven't really enjoyed his character at all this season, unfortunately. He's just lost everything. He's going through this weird, like, emo phase, and I get why he is, but it's just not enjoyable for me to watch personally. My other major problem is the villain of spoilers. If you don't want to know who the main villain is, it's Savitar. It's another speedster. That's my main issue. It's another speedster. We've already had the main villain for Season 1 was, of course, Reverse Flash. Barry's going to get faster. Season 2, Zoom. Barry's going to get faster. And now it's Savitar. If they do the whole Barry's going to get faster storyline again for the second half, I don't know. I'm just kind of sick of it. I have to be honest. I don't really want another speedster villain. Although, this is the god of the Speed Force. He is the first ever speedster. So, at least it's kind of a glimpse towards this possibly being the last major speedster villain that we get for the Flash. Unless, of course, the Reverse Flash returns in a couple of years' time. So, I like that they are kind of going out with a bang for the speedster villains, but I don't know, it feels a bit repetitive, if I'm going to be completely honest. So, I rate 0.5 out of 7. I'm looking for it. Flash is still one of the better shows on TV. It's still got the more believable characters, but I haven't been enjoying this season as much as I have previous, even though what they are doing is very exciting. So, yeah, 5 for me. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm giving it a solid 5 out of 7. 5 out of 7 samurai. I think it's doing really, really well. Still, you know, following the same tropes as they have before, but I'm looking forward to seeing the second half. I'm actually excited about the second half as opposed to Season 2, where I went, oh, okay, let's do this.
Okay, well, now moving on, I'm just going to take a quick break, talk about Gotham very quickly. I actually stuck with it. I enjoyed the first season. I liked how it was a bit more of a cop procedural show at the start. I didn't mind that. A lot of people didn't like it. I didn't mind it. And then, of course, near the end, it kind of turned into like a bit of a gang war type thing, which I enjoyed. Season 2 was just plain stupid. It was just really silly. I mean, you had Gallivant in there, who I didn't care about. The Joker was there for a bit. He was really cool. I really liked what they did with the Joker. And then the second half was all about Hugo Strange. I enjoyed the second season. I didn't love it. I kind of stuck with it because it was fun, I guess. It's just a silly show. Doesn't take itself too seriously anymore. But then going into season three, I wasn't sure whether or not I was going to continue watching it. But season three so far has actually been really solid. I've been really enjoying it. The thing with Gotham is that you kind of got to accept that it's a bit silly. It's got nothing to do with Batman. It's very much their own thing, and they just kind of introduce as many villains as possible. This half season has all been about the Mad Hatter. So he's been in there, and there's been some stuff with Alice. You've got all the kind of Gotham, Batman, Alice in Wonderland characters coming in and out. But my favourite part has definitely been Bruce Wayne and his storyline with, of course, Alfred. And you've got Selina Kyle in there as well as the introduction of the new Poison Ivy. They found some very weird and complicated way to kind of make her more into the character that we know for Poison Ivy. And they have been dealing with the Court of the Owls, which I've been loving. The same with what they have been doing with the Penguin and the Riddler. The Penguin is now mayor of Gotham. His tagline for his campaign was "Make Gotham Safe Again," which I liked. That just kind of incorporates how silly Gotham as a program is. And they've been doing some really interesting stuff with their relationship, mainly the love triangle, in that Penguin, you know, he may have feelings for the Riddler.
I have heard that, yeah.
Which has actually weirdly been working. I've kind of been enjoying it. It's a very weird storyline, but it kind of works. And I think that kind of sums up Gotham. It's weird, but it kind of works. It's kind of enjoyable. I kind of like it. So I'm going to have to give the season so far a solid 4.5 out of 7. I've been enjoying it. It's not the best TV, but it's a bit of a guilty pleasure, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. I have been enjoying it. It's been a lot of fun.
Excellent. All right. And let's move on to Legends of Tomorrow. It's up to their mid-season finale that just happened. They went to 1920s Al Capone-era Chicago. And Legends of Tomorrow was like the little show that could. Last year, they tried to be more traditional in the way of like most shows had a season arc. So they're trying to stop Vandal Savage, and it kind of stumbled its way through its first season, but they've kind of reshaped, came back with season two, and they've made themselves more, they have a little bit of an arc just trying to stop time disturbances, but it's more like standalone episodes in different time periods each week. So it kind of feels more like an 80s TV show, which it needs to be. We've lost Arthur Darvill as Rick Hunter, which is a shame because I thought he was quite solid, and I love seeing Arthur Darvill week to week. But Victor Garber stepped up as always. The actor who plays his partner Jack as Firestorm has gotten a lot better. His working on a weekly show has really helped him become more confident on screen. Brandon Routh is superstar of the show. They've done quite a lot with
Sarah, yeah, the White Canary.
As the leader role, she's done really, really well. Steele has been an interesting sort of like the nerdy guy being brought on who has powers as well. And Mr. Rory as I can't remember his
as Heatwave.
Heatwave, yeah. Who was always the weakest part of season one, but they've done some interesting things with him. Him developing this sort of like friendship with Beast Girl, and him still dealing with the loss of Snark has been quite good. So I'm loving season two. It's a lot of fun. They did some really interesting stuff like zombies in.
I love that episode so much. That episode was so good.
Yeah, really good. And I also like dealing with the racism and slavery of the time, and
yeah,
beautiful scenes right at the end with Victor Garber and Jax about, you know, how a nation and how people move forward after that appalling blip on American history. That was and this beautiful moment about racism and tolerance and acceptance and moving forward was at the end of an episode where there were zombies battling Confederate soldiers, which is hilarious. So, yeah. Having a lot of fun with this season, and it's going to be very interesting to see where they go with season two. What have you thought of the second half of it? What have you thought of Legends?
I have absolutely loved it. I agree with everything that you said. The new cast, great. Steele has been a lot of fun. He's not the best character, but he's definitely got potential. And Vixen rather than Beast Girl. Vixen is the character from Arrow. She has showed up in Arrow once. She's got her own animated series, and this is, of course, her great-grandmother, or just grandmother, and I've been really enjoying her performance. They have gotten the character perfect. Her relationship with Heatwave has been really fun to watch. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. You got all the points out, and I completely agree. It's been a lot of fun. Massive improvement from the first season. Really interested in seeing where it's going. I love how they have also embraced the villain team up, because you do have the Reverse Flash in there. He's teaming up with Damian Dark, who was in the fourth season of Arrow. Another character comes in, played by John Barrowman. Malcolm Merlyn may pop up every now and then as the marvelous Dark Archer, who was a lot of fun to watch. So I love how they are embracing the villain side of the team up as well, which is something that the first season was definitely missing.
I'm loving that. Yeah, the Legion, hopefully they're becoming like the Legion of Doom type thing, which is big in the DC universe. I'm just loving how that's coming across. So we're going to have a lot of fun. That's a more solid story arc villain to have this Legion of villains traveling through time as well. So yeah, well done. I give it 4 samurai out of 7. It's a lot of fun. It's nothing amazing, but it's sure as hell something to waste 45 minutes with a big smile on my face.
Yeah, definitely. I'm gonna give it a 5. Supergirl is the next one. I'm gonna be honest, it's my favorite out of all these. I'm absolutely loving Supergirl. I enjoyed the first season, but the second one has just stepped it up. Melissa as Kara is perfect. She is just a brilliant actress, and they've just written her so well. And again, she's believable. All the characters in this show are believable, aside from possibly James Olsen. I wasn't a massive fan of him in season one, but they've been doing some cool stuff for season two, including the Guardian storyline, in which he just basically keeps trying to be a vigilante, but it never really works out. That happened in the comics for a few years. It always kind of fails in some way or another, and then he tries again and it just doesn't work. They've been doing that, which I've been really enjoying. Alex's storyline has been great. The same with Martian Manhunter. And they have introduced, I think her name's Miss Martian in the comics. I know she showed up in Young Justice for a bit. She's like an on and off Teen Titan. They have introduced her, and her storyline's been a lot of fun. The same with Mon-El, who is another superhero alien to come from the neighboring planet of Krypton, Daxam. And his storyline and performance has been really fun to watch. He's definitely not the best part of the show, but he kind of brings a new element, which I really like. The same with Maggie Sawyer, who is the detective from the police department, who is in the relationship with Alex, and I have been really enjoying that as well. Just as a whole, this half season has been exactly what I wanted from a second season of Supergirl. It's been a lot of fun, and yeah, as I said, it's probably my favorite out of all these shows. It's an easy 6 out of 7 samurai for me. I cannot wait for the second half. I think Kevin Smith is going to be directing episode 9. It's titled Supergirl Lives, which I absolutely, I love that they just named it that, and 6 out of 7 samurai for myself.
An easy 6, which is the sequel to The Hateful Eight. Excellent stuff. Now, time to move on to our big review, which is sort of like quite an ironic thing to say considering we've spent so much time reviewing our consuming lately. But we're going to look at Class.
Yes, yes. The new Doctor Who spinoff, of course, set in Coal Hill with 5 kids and Catherine Kelly playing Miss Quill. And they are dealing with cracks and stuff that are opening up around the school, and there's aliens. It's just your typical Doctor Who stuff.
Yes, now we're going to do something different. We're going to look at very quickly each episode that comes, because it's only one 8-episode season. So let's start off with episode 1, shall we?
Yes, the first episode was called For Tonight We Might Die. This was the one where the Doctor showed up. It introduced the Shadowkin. I would say it introduced the characters, but it didn't.
No, it kind of like these are the names of the characters and this is who they are. You don't know anything about them, really.
Yeah.
Lot of pop culture references, a lot of meta references about, you know, the whole rift in the time and space at the school has kind of been done before, and they make reference to it like with Buffy or with Supernatural. But even though they're trying to be clever and postmodern in their references, it kind of just gave across the blaring fact that this has all been done before and there's nothing really new. So the only person who really stood out of any interest was Miss Quill.
Oh, definitely.
And she pretty much goes on to be the only interesting character in the whole series. I still like watched the first episode. It was good to see Capaldi show up, but he just seemed to be just, he put in as much vim and vigor as he could, but he couldn't really do anything more because that would take away from the power of the characters of that they would need to bring into this show. It was, you know, filled a cameo and got a lot of interest from people who wouldn't normally turn to this show. But yeah, he came and went and left the show to, you know, fend for itself.
I think the writing, especially for the first episode, was not the best. I agree. If we only got the first episode, the first one did come out the same day as the second one. If only the first episode came out, I probably would be the same and I wouldn't have watched it. But the second episode picked up a little bit for me. It's called The Coach with the Dragon Tattoo. Basically all about Ram, the worst character of the show, in my personal opinion. I don't really care about him at all.
I think you said it best with our pre-show talk. He's pretty much the worst. No, he is the worst written character in Doctor Who, in the Doctor Who universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't enjoy him at all. In this episode, he wasn't too bad. This was probably the best performance that he gave all season.
Yeah, they tried something where they went, let's present all these characters in the first episode and give you more detail about them with each episode. So this was the episode to focus on. This is who Ram is. In the first episode, he loses his girlfriend, so automatically he's a character connected with loss. In the next episode, he tries to share his feelings with the lunch lady. Boom, she's killed. So he becomes this character. Whoever gets too close to Ram is killed off, which is a horribly stupid plot point to give a character. It gives him nowhere to go because otherwise he is angry or sad. So we have no middle ground with Ram. He is a character who's either sad because he's lost someone, angry or outraged because he couldn't do anything and nothing's happening. So we get no depth, no range. He's always at 11. The way that he is written to deal with it was just horrible. So I kind of gave up after episode 2. One thing I will say before we go any further, it's clearly pushed at a younger audience. So they've dialed up the teen angst. They've dialed up the gore. They've dialed up, you know, the sexiness of it. And I think it's gone way too far. I think the gore is way too much for a teenage audience. I mean, I know kids love to go out and seek that stuff, and they're watching Game of Thrones, they're watching Westworld and stuff like that. But that show those shows are marketed at an older audience. This is specifically marketed at, you know, teenage audiences. And when teenagers watched Buffy, it was nowhere near as graphic as this. This is some horrifyingly graphic stuff. So anyone between the ages of 12 and 15, if it's marketed specifically at them, I think it's a bad move.
Yeah, it's marketed at the same age group as stuff like The Hunger Games and a TV show called The 100, which is exactly the same thing, very gory for the age group that it's marketed at. And I'm probably at the higher spectrum in terms of this show being marketed towards me. I'm probably just out of reach. But a couple years ago, if this came out and it was like, this is the Doctor Who you teenagers have been waiting for, I would be disappointed. You know, I would have been the target audience and I probably wouldn't have liked it. And I think a lot of the target audience haven't been enjoying it. It's more been the older fans that have been enjoying this show, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, I have been seeing a lot of older fans getting into it where the kids have been like steering away. But let's go to episode 3.
Which is Night Visiting. In my opinion, this episode probably had the best concept, aside from one particular episode, which we will mention later. I really enjoyed the concept. It would have made a cool Torchwood episode, but this episode, for me, kind of captures what I thought of class and the storytelling, which is all over the place. Like, they jump from scene to scene. Like, scenes can only last like 30 seconds before they then jump to the opposite side of the town where different characters are doing something. It worked well, and this one didn't work so much in the rest of the episodes, I thought. But this particular episode, I liked the concept. The performances weren't too bad. I believe Tanya's performance, I thought that she was a big standout for this particular episode. Everyone else was fine. Obviously, aside from Miss Quill, she's an obvious standout for the entire series, but I didn't love it. At the end, where they kind of defeat the enemy by running it over with a bus was really stupid. There were some good elements, but I didn't really think much of this episode. What did you think?
Yeah, pretty much the same. This was the Tanya focused episode, so Tanya centric episode, focusing on her dealing with the loss of her dad and him coming back in this alien form to, you know, tempt her to the other side. There's a bunch of stuff that happened and it didn't really affect me in any positive way. So and the ridiculousness of dragging people away was kind of, you know, not being menacing, it was kind of funny going yoink. There were more concepts than actual creatures. So yeah, the shadow was just a, you know, a samurai version of the Vashni Narada. The tattoo creature was just like a, you know, a big dragon type thing. It was just concepts more than actual living, breathing creatures, which was a shame. So let's move on to episode 4.
Yeah, episode 4 is actually two-parter, teamed up with episode 5. So episode 4 is called Co-Owner of a Lonely Heart, and then 5 has probably my favourite title of the entire series, which is Bravish Heart. One thing, I enjoyed the titles for this this particular show. The titles were quite funny. This two-parter is basically about April and what happens with her heart. Of course, she's sharing the heart with the King of the Shadowkin, and Charlie and Miss Quill are off doing some stuff with the box, while April and Ram eventually get to the planet to do stuff with the Shadowkin. And then there's also stuff about man-eating petals, which was weird. I like the man-eating petals. It would have made a funny, tortured episode. But the two-parter itself, I didn't really think much of. April, the actress who played her, I believed her performance in part one. The writing was still a bit eh. Her performance wasn't too bad with what she was given. With part two, I didn't really care much.
Why would you sleep with Ram? What in what universe would he is he attractive in any way, shape, or form? In what way do you get any arousal around the character of Ram? I'm sorry. He's just like, there is he opens his mouth in any way, shape, or form, and it's either aggression, it's either snarkiness, it's there's no positivity out of him at all. And I get it. He's suffered a loss, and he's lost his leg and all this type of stuff, but he has to be written in a way that we get more than just attitude or emotion. Bringing in April's dad issues and that type of stuff, that was handled well. And her jumping into the Shadowkin realm was quite good, so she was taking hold of her own destiny, which was a brave choice. Bringing in the governors was an interesting arc storyline, because they killed off the principal in the second episode. Beautiful actor who played the principal in the first episode and also in The Caretaker, they bloody killed him off. Don't kill him off. What the hell's wrong with you, Clark? And then, of course, all was resolved, but there was no way that was going to be, you know, the end of the Shadowkin. There was really interesting stuff, though, where April's having sex, then the Shadowkin's getting excited.
I was going to say, yeah, can't we talk about that? It was so off. It was just weird. The Shadowkin, like, this is really weird.
And April was having sex, but then he couldn't perform, and then he...
Yeah.
It was, I'm there going, what am I viewing here? It was, yeah, it was like a... It was like watching a train wreck. It was absolutely going, I can't believe this is happening. Is this actually happening? So, so next up, what was our next episode?
Oh, dear. Episode 6 is probably my least favorite. It was a painful one to sit through. It was Detained.
Detained, that's right. So they're all trapped in one room. It's like a bottle episode.
Yeah, well, it is the very description of a bottle episode. No budget. There was a rock, and when you hold the rock, it makes you say what you're thinking. I never really understood the concept. I just thought it was an excuse for all the characters to shout at each other for 45 minutes.
Yeah, it was angsty. All the angst. Did not like it at all. Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, let's move on. Episode 7 is probably the only episode in this entire season that I would particularly say was a good episode, and that is The Metaphysical Engine, or What Quill Did. This is a solo episode that takes place during the events of Detained. Quill is off doing her own thing. There's like a shape-shifting alien. You find out a little bit more about the governors. I personally love this episode. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was the closest that we are going to get to a really good Doctor Who episode this year. Have to wait and see what happens with the Christmas special. But I really, really, really enjoyed this episode. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, Quill's story is she's a terrorist who's been assigned as punishment to look after the last remaining a member of the royal family of her kind, which is Charlie's character. And so she's been implanted with a creature inside her head that will kill her if she tries to, you know, hurt, or she has to stop anyone from hurting Charlie. So, but this whole episode is about her trying to get that creature out of her head. So it goes to all these wonderful locations and places, and that's where all the money went. So they saved all the money from Detain, so they put into this to create these alien worlds and existences. Yeah, Catherine Kelly was amazing this episode, the three of them going off to try and get this creature out of her head, and her forming this alliance with this other alien, and then they form a attachment, and then they have to face off each other to survive. It was, you know, classic sci-fi writing. Apart from some awkward lines of dialogue there, it was actually a really solid, intriguing episode and great to watch, and it focused on, you know, interesting characters and not just teen angst up to 11.
Yeah, this is the one time in which Patrick Ness, who is, of course, the writer and the showrunner, he wrote all the episodes, this is the first time when his style of writing really came through. I have read a couple of his books. The one that I really like is A Monster Calls. There is a movie about it coming out soon, which I'm really excited to see.
Yeah, he's a very prolific writer, and yeah, one of his other stories, A Monster Calls, being turned into a TV show or a movie. So he's a prolific writer in children's, in young, you know, young adult writing. And in some ways, he stepped up to the challenge to do his own television show. And this episode specifically shows his talent and his creativity and imagination and his ability to write characters. So he should be given that opportunity to let that fly and soar, as opposed to being tied down by that age-old, you know, words, teen angst.
The teen angst, it just gets turned up to 11 the next episode. The Lost, the finale. And this episode was basically, let's just kill everyone and have no fun for 45 minutes, and then have a super weird twist at the end in which there's a weeping angel god, apparently. I don't really understand that part, but the majority of this episode was just death and death and despair. It was actually kind of hard to watch at times.
It was very hard to watch, especially because it establishes this season finale about anyone can die. And that would be great if it's a show that's developed over a whole season, like 10 episodes or even 2 seasons worth or stuff like that, but a show that's only been on for such a short amount of time, we've only known these characters for 7 episodes, to then raise the stakes to a point where, well, we're going to kill off one character's dad, another person's mum. You're there going, we haven't invested enough. We haven't had enough time to see these parents. They're just cannon fodder. There's no real sense of loss there. Possibly Ram's dad, because they showed a bit more of him and he was trying so hard to overcome Ram's just stupidness. We've seen hardly anything of Tanya's mum, so her loss didn't affect us or impact us at all, because we didn't know who she was. So they're trying to raise these stakes, but there were no stakes there because we don't know who these people are. So by the end, when they did the massive reveal, it's all the weeping angels there, the god that the governors represent. I went, meh, it hasn't been, you know, it's not going to get a second season. It's going to end on a cliffhanger. You know, people just went meh for it. There are people who loved it,
yeah,
hated it, but the majority have just gone meh with this. It just needed more. The Quill could not hold it all together. She needed more support, and that's why it will fade into nothing. Yeah, so out of 7 Samurai, I give it 2. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to give it 2.5.
So we did ask for your feedback at class, so we've got some feedback on the Facebook page. Do you care to read some of the feedback from what you've got? Read one of yours, and I'll read mine. We'll go back and forth.
Okay, so Reed said, I watched the first episode and felt totally underwhelmed and didn't go back. We'll probably catch up over Christmas, though. But it did make me go back to Torchwood and binge it from the beginning. Not as bad as I remember, but it's a true bell curve of a series. Starts off bad, gets really good, and then drops off at the end. I completely agree with you on Torchwood. That's probably one positive, one good point towards class. It makes you go back and rewatch Torchwood, which is a good thing.
The good thing about class is it makes you want to watch other shows. I've got some feedback from Scott. Scott said, I didn't mind it. There was way too much teen angst in the show. However, I'm not the target audience. I really didn't think much of episode 2 or 3. The standalone Quill episode 7 suffered from terrible writing. If the show is to come back from another season. They need to break up the writing duties and turn down the teen angst. I totally agree.
Ashley, you were quite positive about it. You said loved it. Maybe it's the teenage girl in me that loved the romance and drama. I don't know. But it got progressively better too. Really hope there's another season after that cliffhanger ending.
Jazz said, boyfriend and I have really been enjoying it. I agree that it suffers a bit of a mixed message in relation to its target audience. It's set in a school and there are a few angsty threads, but the violence threat is real and intense, not a kid's show at all, and much closer in tone to the likes of Buffy.
Amanda, you were a little bit on the fence. You said, we watched every episode. I mostly enjoyed them, but I didn't really enjoy all the sex scenes and the emphasis on relationships. Bit too try-hard and trendy as far as I'm concerned. Just take all that out and they have a good base to build on. You know, that is where Torchwood lost its way. I hate to see so much soapy drama in my sci-fi.
And lastly, on my Facebook feed from Ken, it was a bit like watching a Twitter account. That's a pretty cool thing.
That's perfect.
I also didn't like the gratuitous gore in parts 1 and 2. Some interesting concepts and the Quill character had great depth. I watched them all because I really wanted to like it. Just didn't happen.
Yes. Theo, you said, have to say I empathize more with an immortal time agent from the 51st century than any of these characters.
Pretty much. That is our dissection of Class. Thank you for your feedback, and we really appreciate that, and keep it coming with future reviews coming up.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Nerd Out. It's been a massive episode. It's been a very fun one. Thank you very much for listening. Now, what did you think of the Arrowverse? That's a very big question, and I hope you have an answer for it. You can send us a line on our Facebook page, just message the page, or you can send us a line at feedback.nerdout@gmail.com. All the links, they are in the description. And always, if you want us to review anything, just send the title over, and we'll give it a shot. But next episode, we are going to be very busy, Rob, because next episode, there's a big movie coming out.
On Wednesday night, midnight screening to see Rogue One. And so by the time this comes out, we would have all seen it. And we're very much looking forward to hearing what you think of it. I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of it, Sandro. I'm looking forward to seeing what I think of it. Bring it all together to have a cacophony of nerd discuss the first of the Star Wars spin-offs, and whether this franchise can continue with a Star Wars film every year now for however long they want to go.
And then next week we will have a massive Star Wars special reviewing Rogue One with a guest, so make sure you stay tuned for that. I'm very excited to see how it turns out. And until that fantastic episode which is coming next week, make sure you nerd out. I will see you then. Bye.
Take care, guys. See ya.
You were just listening to Nerd Out, Episode 4, featuring Rob Lloyd and Sandro Felcher. This has been an Improbable Podcast production. Feel free to contact us at feedback.nerdout@gmail.com or send us a message on Facebook for any review recommendations or feedback. The links are in the description. The views expressed are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the network. The opening and closing music for the show is Denial by Dark Shadow. No copyright infringement was intended. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.